Welcome back to the Krivis Podcast. Sorry for such a long break. With the heightened COVID cases, we actually kind of shut down podcasting for a little bit just out of respect for our guests that we had on, which we had one awesome one on today. Brett, who'd we have?
We had Mark Tress. He is an accomplished classical and commercial musician. He is also a vocal teacher at the prestigious Belmont University here in Nashville, and he runs Vocal 360.
Prestigious. Just kidding. That's how fancy people say it, I think. I met Mark through my other endeavor, We Should Rise to Time, and it's just so cool, the people that you get to meet in Nashville, because he just doesn't dive into just normal vocal coaching stuff. He dives into kind of like that neural link and how your voice reacts to it. So you guys are in for a treat today with Mark. Let's jump into it. Pitches, be crazy. hope someone didn't misinterpret what I just said, but yeah, welcome to the Creative Ets podcast. That's how we like to start it. How do you like that?
I like it. I like it a lot.
I'm here with Mark. Is it Thress? Is that how
you
say that?
I'll let you call me whatever you want. Thress is good.
How do you say your last name? I always feel bad, but I like
it. It's Thress. My German ancestors came over and it's probably like some version of a German something or other, and there's an H in it, but it's Tress.
Okay, cool.
Like
I always want to make sure, you know. I mean, I'm so bad with names, anyways. It's like with my brain injury, sometimes I forget first names. I'm just like, Brett, introduce this person. No, it's not actually that bad. But
if you want to spell it out on Instagram, it's Thress.
Thress. Yeah,
that's how you'll find him. Because we just saw your little video of you doing a workout singing.
Oh, like, did you see that?
Yeah, of course
funny.
We did.
That's funny.
So will you explain a little bit about your background, about why with Creative Ets Podcast, we're always trying to engage not just with veterans, but anybody who really wants to learn a little bit more about it. But the main focus brings it back to the veterans. So don't feel like there's anything that you need to direct directly at the veterans. Just know that they're going to be listening because we want them to understand everything about music, about arts, about anything creative, something that they may take away after they've been through one of our programs, or if they're even thinking about our programs, or just give them insight on, with you specifically, like vocals, like what you can do, how you can learn. Almost every veteran we have come through the program say, I'm not a singer. Do I have to sing this? I'm like, no, you don't. But I do want you to know that I wasn't a singer either, and it's a muscle, and you can kind of train it, and you can work with it well enough to where you can actually sing. So that's kind of the gist of this. So I'd love for you to just take it away, a little bit about your background.
Okay. Where do you want me to start?
Oh, man. Actually, have you been in Nashville your whole life? Or
no, I haven't. So I'm actually from outside of Philadelphia, and I lived there my entire life until I moved to Virginia to go to school at JMU, James Madison University. And I spent 4 years there. I actually lived there for 5 years. I worked for another year. And then I moved to Ohio State University, Columbus, Ohio. Spent 2 years there for grad school. And then I had some mentors that I was working with that... we were kind of bouncing back and forth between where I should go next and what I should do. And at the time, we can kind of get into this maybe later, but at the time I didn't really know, I wasn't really truthful for what my end goal wanted to be. You know, I wasn't really listening to what I wanted. And, but I took the leap and I came down here to Nashville. But it's interesting because I never would have thought I would have been in like a country rock and roll sort of town, especially not for songwriting. I actually started off playing the piano and singing, but not officially, you know. And I was in like jazz and pop and R&B. And in high school, I swore I was going to go into neuroscience. And of course, my parents loved that. You know, everybody around me loved that. Nobody in my family had gone to college. My dad went to college, but wound up dropping out after, I think, like a year or so. And so the idea of somebody going to college was really incredible for our family. And so that coupled with me doing neuroscience was like, okay, this guy's going to make a lot
of
money.
He's going all in.
All in, yeah. You know, TV personality, that the whole nine yards. So I told my parents that, you know, neuroscience was what I wanted to do. And specifically, I wanted to study the way music affected the brain to find a cure for Alzheimer's and Parkinson's disease. And so I wound up working and playing the piano and singing at an assisted living home for a long time, and probably like 4 years. And so I got to see the effects of that. And again, everybody's coming up to me, what do you want to do? oh, I'm going into neuroscience. So I got to the point where I was actually applying to schools. I applied to go to schools for neuroscience, got two full scholarships, and then I also applied to go to school for music. And then one of the schools, which is the school I wound up going to the demise of my parents, I was doing music and science, and that was JMU. And so up until that point, I was for sure thinking I was going to do like surgery and research and heal the brain. And I had an experience at the Governor's School of the Arts where I was singing on stage, and I just got this high, and I was like, holy cow, if I can do this, you know, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. And so I told my parents, I said, look, I could have a job that fuels my passion, or I could have my passion that is my job. And I chose to do that. And then the healthy balance was to do both music and science. And so that's what brought me to JMU. So I actually, my background is in vocal performance as an opera singer. My first official like classical voice lesson was in college. So I couldn't really sing with good vibrato or anything like that until I got to college. And for those of you who don't know classical music, I went in pretty blind, and then they gave me these roles to sing, and a role is in a production where you would have to sing tons of music in foreign languages that I had no idea what I was saying, and they just said go. And so here I am coming from like this, oh, I like to do music, let's see what I want to do, to okay, now sing in Italian, French, German, Russian, Spanish, whatever, and be on stage and do the thing. And so that was crazy for me. Like, I did not experience that, or I did not had that experience before, but after doing it a little while, I was like, this is pretty cool. And at the same time, man, I could talk about everything, but at the same time I was doing this, I was over on the other side of campus in the Communication Sciences and Disorders Department, working with neurogenic disorders, doing neuroanatomy and physiology, working with SLPs and speech pathology, and learning all about the way that the brain perceives sounds and phonemes, and working with the International Phonetic Alphabet, which allows you to speak and create sounds in all different languages. So then when I would sing in different languages, I could see symbols that would associate sounds and then allow me to speak and sing them. And so I was learning it from a scientific perspective as well as learning it from the musical perspective. So that was pretty wild. And I got such a release from doing the music and then going over to do the science, because I was with scientific people. So it almost seemed easier because there was a right or wrong. You know, music kind of felt like there was, it's just ambiguous, you know? And you have to realize, I know this is sort of on songwriting and telling your own story. I was telling other people's stories on stage, which is a really weird disconnect for me. I have never been the type of person to be able to get onto the stage and really feel connected to the music. It takes me a long time to be able to do that. But like, I can burst into tears writing my own song, you know? So at this point, my parents were still trying to figure out what I was going to do.
Where they went wrong.
Yeah. What the hell is he doing? You know, I gave up two full scholarships in neuroscience to do what I'm doing now. And, you know, maybe it's for the better, but let's hope so. Right. So at the same time I'm doing this classical music, I also spent time in the studio and I was producing music. So I actually did really well with an a cappella group of mine, and we received the best male a cappella album in the country based off of the production that I had done with them.
That's awesome.
So then I was, you know, splitting time again between doing classical music and science, and I actually got into a program where I was working with music therapy in the oncology center of a hospital. So I'm writing music, I'm performing music, I'm arranging it, I'm in the studio, I'm doing the science stuff, and now all of a sudden I'm thrust into this hospital setting. So another interesting part about my life, I go into the oncology center, and I'm my job is to take an iPad and to go through this music therapy service for actually veterans and people that have been through jail and all these, this eclectic group of people. They were just kind of like, go ahead, you know. Which was wild. And I totally forgot this story until I was talking about this now. I think it's kind of pertinent, which is interesting. So I wound up going into this hospital and working with this one gentleman who's since passed. His name is Dick Phillippe. And he suffered from leukemia from Agent Orange. And so I got to spend a lot of time with him. And he was actually really cool. He used to whittle, and I guess his time overseas or whatever, he used to whittle. And by the end of our time together, he whittled me this walking stick of all the things that we had talked about, and he had kept track without me knowing for like 2 years, and then gave me this walking stick.
That's an amazing art piece. That's incredible. Like a conceptual art piece I would push someone to do.
Yeah, seriously. And it's one of the best. It is probably my most prized possession. And this guy who I really had like no connection with before, every road trip I would go on, I would call him. And, you know, up until his dying day, we pretty much talked like almost on a weekly basis, which is pretty wild. So anyway, then I went to grad school after all this experience and did vocal performance and vocal pedagogy. So I learned again how to sing more classically and also learned how to teach it and how to teach voice and did something called the singing health specialization. So that's sort of the liaison for speech pathologists and singers. And also that whole sort of field of voice science. And then I worked with some of my mentors and they said, you know, you should really check out Nashville. I didn't want to go to New York because I'd been from the East Coast and I was sick of those kind of people. And I didn't want to go to LA necessarily because I didn't want to throw myself into that environment. And I felt like I didn't vibe with a lot of those personalities that I had known from LA. And so Nashville it was.
Yeah,
and
can't shred the gnar here in Nashville.
No, you can't. No, I'm not much of a surfer.
No.
So yeah, so that's what brought me down to Nashville, and I didn't think I was going to come, but within like 2 weeks, I wound up getting all this work, and I teach at a university, or two universities now part-time, and I do some songwriting, and I created my own organization. And
so was the push to come to Nashville, was it the mix between like the healthcare and the music, or did you have a plan saying, I want to teach at this school, or I want to start my own thing here? What was that drive?
Yeah.
Because obviously location is the first part of it, but then what was your intention when you got here?
I knew that I wanted to go to like the epicenter of music. And it was, like I said, either the West Coast or down here in Nashville. And to be honest with you, like I thought, Nashville was like bum 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 bada boom bada boom bada boom, but you know, like some Hickville, and didn't even had such a weird perception being on the East Coast of what Nashville was. And the more I realized what was down here and the people that were down here, I was like, this is incredible. And to be honest with you, I didn't know what I wanted to do exactly. I wanted to make music and songwrite, and I wanted to just kind of go after that dream. And I didn't want to be like the face of anything. I didn't want to be like the next pop singer, like the most famous pop singer. That wasn't really my deal. But I knew that I wanted to work with other musicians and give them an opportunity, along with my own opportunities, to be mentored and to create in spaces that weren't created before. And so that's what sort of developed Vocal 360, which is the program that I run now. And I got to Nashville and I saw all these people that were just, you know, they'll play downtown every single night and hope that they're getting seen by people, you know? And I thought, well, man, I spent my entire life never having a musical influence or music mentor that could, you know, actually guide me through things. And I thought, there's probably an opportunity here. And at this point, I had already been teaching lessons and guiding people from around the world, all over. And I thought, okay, this is a pretty cool opportunity here. And then lo and behold, I actually didn't even realize that there was a lot of healthcare stuff down here. Coming from Columbus, I didn't know, but there's a big connection between the two in Nashville.
Well, I'm super pumped for this conversation because I think a lot of the tools that songwriters, artists, people use, the last tool they seem to try to enhance on is their voice, because they don't see it as a tool. I mean, the lead singers typically will, and they'll try to do things to help offset it, but a lot of that is they're learning as they kind of grow in the business. Sure. So there's a lot of people who are starting in it who just say, well, I'm going to learn the Nashville number system, or I'm going to keep trying to play guitar. I'm going to try to start doing tracks because they want me in the room more. Hardly, I don't know a lot of them that are like, oh, I'm going to work on my vocal lessons. And I mean, I know vocal warm-ups, but really to dive into what the voice is doing. But I do know, Brett, that was the first time I still remember I came down with you one time and you were taking vocal lessons. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what my perception of vocal lessons were, but I came down with Brett and I was like, he's like, you just chilling here while we go upstairs and do our vocal lessons. Then I'm sitting there like reading. I think it was like a magazine about Liz Rose and what she was doing with Taylor Swift. And all of a sudden I hear just like, I'm like, what is happening? I thought it was like, hey, you sing for him and then you talk about, you know, the things that he can correct and a little, And I, again, my perception was so different.
It's actually like a vocal workout. So like you go to the gym and you train, you actually have to train how your vocal cords meet and then your placement.
Yeah. So because it is a muscle, and I want to really encourage everyone, not just the veterans, but mainly the veterans, to know that even if you're not trying to pursue being a singer, it is a muscle, something that you can get better with, so that you can, if you do end up writing songs and telling these stories, you can get better at it. Or if you, if you're like those American Idol ones that think they're a really good singer, but they're not, keep on working on it, because you could get to that point. So will you dive into some of the science or the biology or whatever it is that really makes your voice something different? Like you said, when you first started, you couldn't do a lot of things you could now. Mm-mm. But give me a little like vocal class lesson that you would teach someone, especially a veteran who wants to know that it's an option, because most people don't think singing would be an option for them.
Well, I like to start at the very basic. When you look at the voice, what is the voice meant for? It's meant for communication, right? And so I have a really fabulous mentor here in town. Her name is Judy Rodman. She's incredible. You know Judy.
I met with Judy, I think, before.
You've taken lessons from her. Fantastic. Yeah. So she and I talk about this all the time. You know, your voice is meant for communication. And so what happens is when you are feeling a particular way, it's reflective in your voice. And so as a trained singer, sometimes we want that. Sometimes we don't. Sometimes we need to be able to sing the song and not get choked up. Actually, a tip that I actually use for my professional singers or anybody who's singing, this might be useful for you, but as I was thinking about this, it's kind of changed a little bit. So the idea that I talk about is when you're singing a song, whether it's your own song or a song of somebody else that you're emotionally connected to, you have to be close enough to that fire to feel it. It has to feel warm, but you can't be immersed in it. Otherwise, you can't sing, and you can't be too far away. Otherwise, no one believes you and you're disconnected, right? So I was thinking about what you guys do. And it's interesting because that fire is kind of like, you know, it's no longer your fire. It is your fire, but it's like compartmentalized and it's just sitting beside you sort of. And you're like, this is the song that I've written, you know? So it's interesting. But yeah, you have to realize that your voice is composed of various different elements that actually make your sound sound the same, or sound like you rather. And the object is communication. So sometimes having a perfect voice, there's no such thing as a perfect voice. You know, imperfections in a voice are actually better than having a trained voice. And in many ways, you know, I've been trained for years now, but I try to untrain some of the things that I'm doing to sound more authentic. So if somebody is starting off singing for the first time and they're looking for ways to grow and develop as a singer, the first thing you got to think about is, what are you trying to say? How are you communicating your sound? And is having a quote-unquote imperfect sound better for that? Yeah, probably, you know, if it's your story. We wouldn't want to fix, like, I'll use some pop singers. We wouldn't want to fix, like, Bruno Mars or Harry Styles or Justin Bieber's voice, like, fix them because it would no longer sound like them. It would sound too perfect, right? In fact, if we were to talk about the perfect voice, I don't know if I can name one. Most people think classical singers, but even them, then they have imperfections, right? So your voice is composed of several different elements, and two main things that we talk about are the TA muscle and the CT muscle. The TA muscle is the thyroarytenoid muscle, and for a long time we used to think that that was only for belting, like, hey, that kind of sound. I don't know if I'm allowed to do that in here, but I'd probably disturb next door, but that kind of sound. And then there's the CT muscle, which is like, that kind of light sound or falsetto, right? And we used to think for a long time that that's the distinction. You're either in this version of the CT muscle or this version of TA muscle. And the way I try and teach it is it's like, you know, a bicep and a tricep. So when you're doing certain exercises, you're in some ways using a variation of both. You're not just simply using your bicep and you're not just simply using your tricep exercise, right? And so when you're singing, you actually have to think of those things. You have to think of the balance of your voice. If we want to use colors, another analogy I say too is, most singers, and guys, this happens all the time, because we sing and speak in our speaking voice or speaking register oftentimes, and then we have this flip that happens that goes into this like girly sort of high falsetto sound. Well, a trained singer works to actually blend those. And what that does is it gives you different, we call colors of the voice. And so you can think of it as a palette, like a color palette, maybe black to white or whatever, you know, a darker shade to a lighter shade. And in between, everything is gray. So when I talk to singers, you have to think about the transitions of your voice as being gray, neither in your what we call chest voice or your speaking register or in your head voice or your falsetto or something like that. So when you're training your voice, there's different things that you can do to be able to connect those two. And this is, like you were saying earlier, it's like a muscle, you know. There are weird exercises you do in the gym to like get that, you know, the utter portion of your pec muscle or something like that. Or, you know, you do these funky exercises to try and get those small muscles. And that's really what we need to do as singers. We're working things that we can't see. And so some things that I actually do with singers is I work on their speaking voice. And this is interesting. Most people don't think about this. Most voice teachers actually don't talk about this. Now I think we're getting into it a little bit more because the research is out there. But what do you do more of when you're going about your day? You speak, right? So there's an Italian term, I'm probably going to butcher it, but it's something like se conta come si parla. And it's like you sing as you speak. And so in many ways, if you're speaking the same way every day, your singing voice is going to be very similar. So you're going to work so hard to get your singing voice to be different than your speaking voice. But what does that mean? So if I'm an everyday guy, am I going to start talking like this?
Hello. Hello, dude.
Yeah. No.
Hello.
Hey, how's it going, Richard? No, I would have no friends. I remember I was in college and my teacher, in a very operatic way, said, you need to speak like this. And I said, I would have zero friends. I'm not doing that. And me being a guy that like played football my whole life, and I played three sports my whole life, and I get into college and I'm like looking around at these music people like I was just doing this for fun, you know? And for him to tell me that, I was like, no, right? But there's something to be said about that. So a lot of guys kind of talk like this, right? You know, and they sit down on their voice and then they wonder why their voice doesn't really work well for singing. Well, that would kind of be like if you sat with bad posture or walked with bad posture and wondered why you couldn't, you know, slam dunk or something, right? So there are exercises that you use in tandem with changing your speaking voice, or at least enhancing your speaking voice so that it's more efficient as a singer.
And you do that every day? Or is it more of a...
I use my voice every day because I speak so much.
Yep.
And you don't know it right now, but this is my like... I'm in my speaking voice right now.
You're faking it?
My natural voice.
You're
yeah.
a faker?
I'm faking this right now. Everybody listening. Yeah. No, but I am in many ways because my natural voice is probably kind of down like this.
So are you actually trying to mimic if you were singing, you're trying to emphasize? Like, is that what you're trying to do with your voice, is make sure that you're using all those same kind of levels that you would if you're singing? Is that kind of...
Or more the airflow?
Well, so we're getting into different things, and this is great, actually. I want to talk about this. So... I'm trying to, because I speak so much and I sing so often, I'm speaking and singing hours a day. Like I'm literally speaking and singing probably from 10 to 7 every single day. And that equates to probably like at least 4.5-5 hours worth of actual voice use. So the only way that I can survive, it's like long-term endurance, right? I have to be in a position where I can use my voice appropriately, right? And it has to be pretty efficient. But breath support does come into play here, right? If you are thinking about your voice when you're singing, you need ample breath support. You also need several different elements like articulation. I have to be clearly articulating my words. I can't just be mumbling like this. You wouldn't really understand what I'm saying, right? So there's this extra amount of effort, and it goes into the cocktail of things that you need to be a good singer, but there's this extra amount of effort that you need to apply to make sure you're doing those sort of things. And breath support is certainly one of them. In fact, there's several elements, and we could talk about this, actually. It's important. A lot of people think that, oh, you just need more breath to be able to sing. Like, yeah, just use more breath. That's not necessarily the case, because I can use a lot of breath and sound like actual trash, you know? Really, it's this sort of delicate balance of enhancing your speaking voice in a way that can fit the pitches that you're needing to sing. It's pretty much as simple as that. And the better you can do that, and the easier you can do it, the better off you're going to be. If you're communicating the message and people, you don't sound like something other than yourself, then you're going to reach people a lot more clearly. There's a disconnect with opera singing, right? And I'll use this example because I think it's good. So with opera singing, you're familiar with an operatic sound, right? Mm-hmm. At least, okay, so opera singing is not meant for a microphone, actually. It's meant to be in a large house. And why is that? It's so that you can actually enhance your voice to be heard far away. But the process of doing that is abnormal sounding. Like my operatic voice doesn't really sound as close as my commercial voice, singing voice, because it's further away in resonance than my actual speaking voice, right? So I used the term resonance. Resonance is something that you enhance to make your voice sound clearer, to make the vowel sound clearer, to allow you to hit certain pitches. It's sort of the tuning mechanism that you use in your mouth to shape the vowels and to shape the sounds to make it easier for yourself. So as a voice coach, oftentimes I'll tie back to speaking. If I have someone that kind of talks like this, they're not really speaking with a lot of resonance.
But if you have a guy who kind of speaks like this, he already naturally has a lot of, yeah, and welcome to iHeartRadio, you know, you have some natural resonance. So that comes into play when you're teaching a voice. You need to make sure that you have the resonance to help project your voice, like an operatic sound in many ways. But you don't want to sound like an opera singer, because to many people, and you get a guy off the street, you listen to an opera singer and they sound like characterized almost, right? So how do you get a normal guy to be able to sing and be comfortable with his or her voice, right? I guess a guy, but comfortable with their voice, and also to be able to sing well? In many ways, you have to enhance their speaking voice and, like I said, put the cocktail together with breath and articulation and all those other things, including resonance.
So weird to me, like, to think that you would, because obviously speaking, breathing, all the things that come so naturally, but then you start talking about training your, even the breath that you're taking and exhaling and the way that you're talking and being very intentional about it. Does it just go away after when you're first teaching someone how to train even their speaking voice? Does it take a while for someone to not have to think about it anymore? Does that make sense?
So
because if I'm,
well, that also goes back to shooting a gun. You just got to pull the trigger.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
you know, or do you want to actually hit something that's 50 yards away?
Yeah.
I liken it to, like, how many guys, you know, I have a buddy, I'm not going to name him on here because he's one of my best friends. No. Joey. No, I'm kidding. I'm his best man in his wedding. And he's like, I mean, he's, I don't know, he's not very tall. He's maybe 5'9", no, he's probably about 5'10". And he used to be maybe like 215 or something. He's a big dude. I mean, he looks like a bodybuilder big. And he was in the Army. Anyway, so he's, God, I can't believe I'll say this. He's one of those guys that, like, he's got big muscles, but he doesn't know what to do with them necessarily. You ever seen those guys? And then you get a scrappy guy that's strong as hell.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right? So it's sort of similar, like, you know, with the voice, you might have big muscles. You might have a naturally big resonant tone, but you need to kind of know how to put those parts together, right? And so going back to what you're saying, you know, how do you get someone's voice to change and how long does that last and whatnot? And don't get me wrong, it's not like all of a sudden I want Brett to start changing his voice. I think Brett has an awesome voice and I can hear the sound of music that you would start making, you know? But you have to instill some sort of like unconscious repetition, this muscle memory that stays the same, just like shooting a gun or picking up a guitar or riding a bike or something like that. And what I do specifically, one of the techniques I use is I actually, if I'm in like a studio or something like that, I have someone pick up a book or a poetry. Poetry is really fun because it changes. So I usually do a section from a book and a poem. And so I'll have them read and they'll be like, so Mark Tress was born in such and such year and he goes to the, right? And then I'll say, okay, now read that to me again, but pretend I'm like 3 years old or something like that. Or like pretend you're reading to a group of people. Mark Tress was 5 years old. Okay. Right. And so slowly but surely, and then all of a sudden they go, well, Mark Tress was born in Philadelphia. And right. And you get them to a point and you're like, okay, you would do that anyway on a normal basis. If you get excited, Richard, you're going to be like, oh, yeah, man. You wouldn't be like, oh, yeah, man. Right. So your voice changes naturally. And you just go through the process of saying, hey, this is really helpful for your voice. This is really efficient. And then you translate that into singing. And the poetry one is actually interesting because when you use a poem, then they get into like this sort of character voice. So that with poetry, it has to sound a particular way. Like opera has to sound a particular way. Or being a singer has to sound a particular way, right? And so slowly but surely, you sort of navigate that.
And if it's poetry or these even children's books and stuff, then it's like it probably falls in that iambic pentameter. What is that called?
Iambic pentameter.
Yeah, where you're, it's kind of your repetition. So wouldn't that help too? Because is that how you are you doing stuff with breath and repetition as well? Because if you're doing like a Dr. Seuss book or something,
sure,
it's more like da 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 da, like the perfect amount of breath or syllables. Is that something that plays a part, or is it just something I made up?
You know, that's a good point. I don't really focus on that too much because I think so much of the sound changes depending on the person. And like, you know, if you're writing a pop song, you actually don't want all the phrases to be really long.
Yeah.
You want them to kind of be conversational, like country. Can you imagine if every country song was like, and I've been, no, it would not read, right?
whereas classical singing is way more about the breath control and connection, right? Here's the distinction. A lot of this, like, you should do this as a singer, came from those, that pedigree of, like, classical singing is paramount, and it has technique and all this sort of stuff.
And they were top dogs back in the day.
Yeah,
when
right.
This other stuff existed.
Yeah.
Seriously. We showed them. No, just kidding. Quit trying to push your singing on me.
Get the hell out of here. Yeah. Well, now you have, like, you know, a guy can produce a song in his home studio that can be a hit record.
Yeah.
So,
and they don't even have to sing anymore.
No, they don't. Auto-tune, Melodyne, you know.
They're like, they're like, have you heard, you've seen
you
that.
Can do all sorts of stuff.
You've seen that thing where they say that Post Malone is actually Justin Bieber. Have you seen
I've seen that.
There's stuff, because what you can do with music, they play Post Malone songs, and then they play, they tune it down to whatever Justin's key is, and it looks like, they, legitimately, they just slow it down, and it sounds just like Justin. Google it. Everyone out there,
that's
Google
crazy.
It. Well, you know, you can do a lot with machines now.
Well, you can. You know, like, what deepfakes are, right?
Yep.
Yeah, deepfake technology. I would equate what we have in deepfake technology in music.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So
no,
you have
sure.
the capability of, like, I could sing a crappy note, man. Actually, there's a device called MADE, M-A-D-D-E, I think it is. Because, well, we're really getting into the science of it, I guess. But all of sound is, you know, there, it's math, really, and sound waves. But there's a technology called MADE, M-A-D-D-E, I think it is. Anyway, where you can put in certain variables, and I can recreate Brett's voice. Mm-hmm. It would sound almost exactly like
crazy.
Yours. Wow. And it's just numbers. Like, I know your vibrato rate is 4.1 frequency, whatever, and the pitch variation and the
jitter. Like a recipe.
You're it really like, is. How do it's I, a cocktail yeah. of whatever.
That's crazy.
Isn't that bizarre? Now, that's not...
I can't wait to make some prank phone calls.
Hello, and welcome to... Yeah, but that's not something that people would necessarily use on an album, but that exists in a scientific world for many different reasons, you know?
That's crazy.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah. But also, yeah, that's just, that's like, it's hard to wrap your head around that. I mean, we know it probably exists and it could exist, but then hearing about it is a whole other thing. It's like, oh yeah, I could legitimately now completely copy a person and copy their voice. You could legitimately recreate Brett.
You could just be like, hey,
I don't even need you anymore. Why,
why are you here, Brett?
I want new AI, Brett.
Just beam them up like hologram. There's a software, actually, it's called Descript, I believe, and it's for podcasting and stuff. And if I, so you have enough of my scent cadences and sentences put together.
It's actually why we brought you here.
Yeah, you're just gonna recreate. Yeah, but you can if I didn't say something properly, you can type in what you wanted me to say, and the AI software will create my voice to say those words. Like if I say the F-bomb right now, which I won't.
Wow. But we can make
but you. But you can make it. You can
right
make
there,
me.
Insert it, Brett.
Yeah.
That's wow. crazy. Yeah. Well, I mean, anyway, we can, yeah, the future is going to be insane.
On
it's kind of like what we were talking about earlier. Earlier, we recorded a different podcast with me and Mark, but talking about how, like, where things are going and how you think the future is going to look. When it comes to that stuff, it's like, what does the future look like
it's
when
scary, man.
This stuff exists already? Like, what's going to exist? Oh my God.
Oh, it's, yeah.
Anyways, let's get back to the singing portion, because I also want to know what kind of techniques daily should people be doing? Is it bad to sing in the car to all the music that's out there, because all the different keys and all the different matching? Is that actually worse for your voice, or is that better for your voice?
That's a great, great question. So you hit two things. What should you do daily, and can you sing in the car? I think you should sing in the car all the time. I think that's totally fine. You just have to be careful with how loud you're actually singing. I attribute singing to, like, keeping a nice car, right? You have to tune it, you have to wash it, you have to put oil, gas, the whole nine yards, store it in a garage, that kind of thing. If you just take care of your voice like you take care of the rest of your body, hopefully you're taking care of your body, then you're fine.
But does trying to match the artist, so if Lee Bryce is on, I'm going to sing him the way he sings, and then all of a sudden Carrie Underwood comes on, I'm
going
to like, and I'm going to try to do that. That's what kind of I meant to, where obviously you don't want to go too high or too low, but
yeah.
Mimicking voices hurt your voice?
Yeah, I think if you do it for an extended period of time, right? You know, it's actually good in many ways to mimic people that are doing it well.
You know, you would want to mimic MJ because he's amazing at basketball, right?
Yep.
But if you have to recognize that a lot of what you hear on the radio and what you hear on an album or something is not exactly what went into the microphone.
Yeah.
Right. There was actually years ago when the radio first came out, there was this whole weird thing that happened across the world where people were singing like with this weird sound based off of what they were hearing on the radio because they assumed that that's what the sound was supposed to sound like. Mm-hmm. So these common people were having these really weird, tinny sort of sounds, right? Based off of what they were hearing through the radio. But yeah, it's totally okay to do that.
Okay.
Where I would advise everyone to be to be aware is make sure you're singing in a comfortable range. You know, and if you're doing screamo and then trying to sing a female song as a guy and then going through and saying, you know, that's where I would say be careful.
Okay, because I wasn't sure if it was, you know, when you're trying to get your max, I mean, you go all in sometimes because you're trying to get stronger and stronger. Yeah. And what I found that seemed like it was helping my voice is when I was writing these songs with the veterans and these pro writers, a lot of these writers had extremely awesome voices and they can go all different routes. And for me, if I wanted to actually play this song out, I would have to push myself to at least try to mimic enough. And I found that that was almost more helpful was I would try the song like 8 different times without anybody, because me and Brett actually used to live together and I'd wait till he was gone or something. Cause I knew I had to be confident enough to know I was going to really suck when I first tried, like, sure. until I'd get there. But sometimes I'd finally make it to where it was like a path where I was like, I kind of figured out how to sing it the way that I would want to, but I was also just kept pushing myself to try to get there enough so that I felt comfortable. And there's still songs that I was actually listening to a song today that we wrote, Not Ready to Remember, that song we wrote about Clay. And Eric Etheridge is such a good singer that he goes from like a very low like this to like, and I'm super still trying to figure out how to connect those two. So like, what would you, for someone, and I know I want to get back to what we do daily, but what is someone to do who maybe not make that connection from like the verse being low to the automatic.
If you can afford a voice coach or if you can work with a voice coach, they do wonders. It's like having someone at the gym helping you, you know, but, if you're trying to sing, if you want that impactful high note sound and your voice just cause isn't quite there, you need to work your way up, man. You need to take your speaking voice and you need to adjust it so that it's, you're able to sing with it. And then you need to make sure that as you're increasingly going higher and higher, that you take it stepwise each way, you know, note by note by note by note. And eventually you get there. But a lot of people think that, here's the key. A lot of people think that singing high note is something powerful. You always see these singers on stage and they're like doing these big body movements to get up there. It's really not a lot. It's effort, but it's not as much as you think. It's more stretch than it is push. So simply stretching your voice is like trying to get into a split or something. I don't know. Simply stretching your voice is actually going to get you there better and more efficiently and easier than actually just trying to push higher and higher and higher and higher. It's not that kind of weightlifting.
Okay.
That took me forever to figure out when I started singing, because I come from athletic, playing sports and everything.
Yeah.
So the harder you try, you know, the more weight you push, the stronger you get. The more you sprint, then the faster you get. But with singing, it's very like, I wish I could see. That was another hard thing too, is like you can't see somebody's vocal cords and what they're doing, like how much air pressure needs to come through, like how are the cords connecting, all that stuff.
Yeah. No. And people think that if I can't get it now, if I just keep pushing, I'll get there. Like if I just keep lifting 315, I'll get to
320.
Yeah, I'll get to 320. It's not quite like that. It's not quite like that. Actually, the vocal folds themselves, the whole purpose of them, I wish I could show you with something how they work, but they come together. All right, now if I open up my mouth. No. So the vocal folds are, they come together, right? All right, I'll talk about this a little bit, basics of vocal pedagogy. But when you take a breath in, the vocal folds open. Okay. The whole purpose of your larynx, your voice box, right, is to actually, or let me backtrack. The whole purpose of your vocal folds is actually to protect your airway. So that's why you cough when stuff goes through it, right? There's a natural reaction to that. I try to turn that off. I don't know why.
No worries.
Anyway, there's a natural reaction to that. That's why you cough, right? So when you breathe in, it's open. When you make a sound, the vocal folds come together. In order to change pitch, they stretch, like moving your finger on a violin or something like that, a violin string or a guitar string, right? So in order to sing a higher note, you just have to stay together and stretch a little more. That's it. if you push more, you're actually applying more pressure on your voice. That's like really pressing down on a guitar string and trying to move it or something. Like, that's going to make a better sound. It's really not. You have to stretch the voice to be able to get up to the top. And then once that balance is there, then you can start to add a little bit more breath energy.
That's awesome. Yeah, kind of like when you first, if you start golfing and you think if you hit harder, you need to grip harder. But yeah. Really, they're like, no, you grip like less. You keep it loose. And it seems like counterproductive because you're like, well, I'm swinging faster. I don't want to get rid of this. But then keeping it loose is what really keeps you in that same movement. So that's super interesting. Yeah, definitely yeah. Something I didn't know. Because, yeah, I've never taken vocal lessons. And I know Brett did, so I knew he'd have some good insight too. But that's why most people who've listened to this probably haven't. And that's why I want to really talk about it and push it so that they hopefully will either try that route or they'll start doing something themselves, like daily, just to help them out. Or they don't hear the wrong thing like me just saying, like, just go for it. Just bench that.
if it's helpful, I can give a couple exercises that are useful.
That'd be awesome. As if it goes along too with the day-to-day stuff that I was talking about, like what can someone do just starting out day-to-day to kind of either maintain or to get to that next level possibly?
Yeah, if you're a singer and you're writing your music and you just want to get to that next step where you're like, okay, I'm really comfortable with singing and I'm really making an impact with my voice. A couple things you need to think about. Your diet actually affects your voice. Your vocal folds are internal. They're not external, right? So they're affected by a lot of different factors. They are affected by external factors, but you have to think about them internally, right? Hydration. So if you're the kind of guy that just doesn't really like to drink water or doesn't really think about it often, first thing you should do every morning is drink water, several glasses of water. If you're prepared, there you go. Yeah. Drink up. So hydration is really effective. And then having a routine for yourself where you're eating healthy and exercising. And I actually find that I breathe and sing better after I exercise. So if I go for a run or if I'm lifting weights or something like that, I actually am a better singer. So that's just kind of like the lifestyle change that you would make. And if you're the kind of guy that also has like acid reflux, I'm going to add this in here because it's so prevalent. But if you have acid reflux and you always complain about it and then also complain about your voice, well, guess what? It affects your voice too. So if you have heartburn, indigestion, all that kind of stuff, quit eating so late at night if you got to sing the next day. So the Tums and everything might help, but it's not going to help you with something called GERD. It's gastroesophageal reflux disease. So quit eating late at night. Quit drinking a bunch of caffeine, soda, whatever that's late at night. Give your body a rest, and your vocal folds will actually be way more healed in the morning. You'll be able to sing higher. You'll be able to sing longer and louder, all those kinds of things. So that's a lifestyle change. Physically, if you're thinking of like warm-ups, simple hums, that kind of sound, that's really good. Getting the sound to be really buzzy, but easy, right? We want our body as performers to convey the message, but we don't want to feel all the emotions in our voice. Actually, I'd like to address this. So when you're upset and you're like holding back tears, you got that ball in your throat, you know, your emotions go right to your throat, right to the center of where you're trying to communicate. So, pardon me. So if you're a singer, you want to be free there. You want to be able to use your voice and communicate in that way, right? So it's about connecting in that way. But keeping the sound really buzzy is important because you want it to be easy and show everybody that you're connected to it and emotionally be connected, but have the freedom of your voice. You know, you don't want to get locked up when you're actually trying to sing and convey an emotion. So humming is a good one. A lot of people do lip trills, which is really good. I personally like straw phonation, which is awesome. If you have a straw, a coffee straw or something maybe a little bigger, you can blow bubbles in a water bottle. I know that sounds so cheesy and weird, but you would be so shocked at how easy it is.
That'll actually help higher. Because that's fun, you know? Yeah. I mean, I don't want to do the other stuff. It's not fun, but you give me some chocolate milk and a straw, I'll blow bubbles for days.
Can you imagine a bunch of vets in the...
Oh my gosh. Like we're practicing our vocals.
Richard's like, all right, everybody, gather around. Okay, here's your chocolate milk. They're like, what the hell?
And here's your straw.
We'll blow your bubbles.
But that's awesome.
So is that just to keep your air flowing?
Air flowing consistently as well as stretching up to your higher register.
Okay.
And lower register too, if you want to sing lower.
And because it's a little bit of pushback, right? Because if you're doing this, there's obviously nothing besides other air. But when you're pushing that, it's you're legitimately fighting the liquid that's always trying to come back.
That's so intuitive of you. Yeah, that's the resistance that we look for. And that resistance simulates what's supposed to happen at your vocal folds. So when you remove that, the same sensation should happen at your voice. If you go, out and all of a sudden push too hard, that doesn't work.
Yeah.
But if you mimic exactly what the balloon, well, that's what I want to talk about in a second, but if you mimic exactly what the water bottle is giving you, then that's the key to singing. Right?
That's awesome.
Another really quick functional thing, if people are looking for things to take with them or to do when they're on the road or whatnot at home, Judy Rodman, again, I mentioned her name. She's a close friend and mentor of mine. She and I have been developing this idea with the balloon. If you actually take a balloon and instead of blowing it up, you actually sing through it. So you blow enough air that it inflates and you sing through it. You have the tactile feedback of feeling the balloon and it keeps that air consistent. Mm-hmm. So the consistency of the air is actually really important rather than how much air you have. It's consistency and the balance for what you're trying to do. So you can take a balloon and just go... Just that simple feedback, the resistance of the balloon without blowing it completely and feeling it inflate will almost immediately transform your voice.
So are you trying to, if it was blown up partially, are you trying to, when you're singing in it, keep it around the same size or how, what do you mean by that? I'm trying to get a visual.
Yeah, I wish I had a balloon.
Yeah.
I bet you there's one lying around. I think there's a package of balloons right there. I'm not going to touch them though. Anyway, so if I were to just like blow up a party balloon and start to blow up a party balloon, it'll go and inflate.
Yep.
Right. If you feel that, you feel that there's air in there. If you stop blowing air, it starts to deflate. When you're singing, you're releasing air. So if you release a consistent amount of air, you can actually feel it on the balloon. If you're singing going, and the air is inconsistent, that balloon will go in and out.
Okay.
The whole
time.
So to feel the consistency, much like hearing the bubbles of the water bottle when you're blowing into it, you can feel the vibrations and the connectivity of the breath and the consistency of the breath as you're singing through the balloon.
That's
it's pretty
awesome.
Wild. Yeah.
I can't wait. Send us your videos of you trying this. info@creativeits.org.
Can you imagine?
That'd be great. That'd be cool when you guys do. Are you all?
There's videos out already.
Oh, okay, I was going
to
say.
Yeah, we're trying to actually do a research paper or something on it.
I think that, because I feel like that could be something that, obviously, because it's fun to watch people probably try this stuff. It could be a viral thing where you lean in on the media portion of this to get it more well known so people could start using it and trying that out. Because it's always cool. There's always new things. And to think that the old tricks, I mean, they'll probably always work, but there's got to be other ways like the balloon and the milk and whatever you're blowing through a straw that help enhance it. But that's awesome because I'm definitely going to take that into a factor as well. That's awesome. Well, I mean, we don't want to keep you here too long, too, but I want to know if Brett, if you have any additional questions or if there's anything that you feel like you left out. Because, again, this is really information for any veteran who's even thinking about it. We're hoping maybe they'll reach out to you. Maybe they'll reach out to a vocal coach. Maybe they'll just understand that singing is something that everyone can do. It's just like when I have veterans who say, I'm not an artist. I don't have an artist bone in my body.
Yeah.
The second question or the second statement typically for songwriters, I'm not a singer. I can never sing. And then we just want to kind of like... Nope, you can't. There's ways that you can train this to do that.
Absolutely.
Like, how do you train when you get emotional and it all goes to your neck? Like, do you just got to slowly, like,
throat punch.
I release here, like, I feel it here in my heart.
Throat punch, yeah. Just quit,
stop
actually.
It.
Just stop doing it. No.
Stop being sad, Brett.
Stop being emotional. No, it's true. You know, there's a lot of, like, neuropsychology and stuff that goes into play with this. You really do have to put yourself in a position to be able to accept that and to be able to do it. And this is probably not helpful for everybody, but if you think about these guys that are on stage and they go by like a stage name or something, when they go on stage, they are that name. You know, you are Bruno Mars. You're not whatever his actual name is, right? You are so-and-so. So there's this disconnect that they need to have to be able to put their emotions at the door and be able to sing on a big stage. Now, if you're writing your own story, you have to deal with that. So the important thing to do is to understand who you're communicating to and why. And much like your story, you know, Richard, you're out to help other people. If your message can help other people, and it can, because everybody's message and everybody's story can help other people, if that can have an impact on other people, it's your job to be able to tell your story. So you have to accept that this is something emotional for you, but be able to put yourself in the mindset that my ultimate job is to communicate this message. My ultimate job, whether it's perfect or imperfect vocally, it doesn't matter. Usually the first take that's a little more emotional is probably better anyway. But it's your job to be able to convey that message. And I think that goes into play too with, you know, a lot of people think, oh man, I'm not an artist. Like, you know, someone else should tell my story. No, that's not true. Like, if you think of the perfect singer, first of all, it doesn't exist. But if you think of maybe your favorite singer and you say, okay, why do I love Garth Brooks? Well, because I like his voice. Okay, why do you like his voice? Well, when he's singing, like, you can feel that he's into it. Exactly. You're getting something from that singer. And so people need to recognize that when they're singing their stories or singing a story, that their job is to connect with the listener, and that that's the first step. It doesn't matter if you don't have a great voice. I mean, at this point, we hope that you can match pitch, but even then, it doesn't necessarily even matter. You just need to do it. You just need to tell your story. You just need to convey that message. And slowly but surely, you kind of find your own sort of path in doing that.
I think that's how I've captured people. I lean in more on the capturing them with the song than the voice. So my voice will catch up one day, but as long as I can capture that emotion, well, that's what really
being real and authentic trumps technique.
Always. Always. You always see these singers that are like on the verge of losing it, but you're like, that was the best performance.
Yep.
And then if someone's up there just like rocking and rolling and it's too easy, you're like, okay, that was fun. But it's those intimate moments, like when people just have a guitar or something and they're not in the big set and you're like, whoa, like they did something different. You could feel that they're really connected to that moment, you know?
That's what we do. We tell those stories and we, because every song that we write happens to be a true kind of usually crazy or inspirational or sad story. So every one of them captures that. And I think that's why people are attracted to it. Even people who aren't veterans will come to these songs and just, I don't know, it opened up emotions for them that they could feel like they could relate to them finally. Mm-hmm. So it says a lot that we don't even have to try to say, but we'll still try to get those, you know, top singers on there.
Yeah.
But I was, you know, explaining to Big Machine and other people, you just have to hear the songs. It doesn't matter who's singing them.
Yep.
Let's just let people hear the songs because it's the story. It's the emotion that they evoke. Because most of the time, the songwriter is the singer on the song when we release it. And you could see them own it. It's actually probably hard for an outside artist to come in and try to sing one of our songs, even if they're the best ever. Because to be able to own that, and if you're in the session, you get to feel it. You get to be a part of it. You get to kind of learn what that emotion feels like so you could project that on stage. But I would feel bad for the artist that just comes in off the street and says, yeah, give me one of those songs to sing. And then they're just like, whoa,
yeah,
I'm really going to have to own this one.
I don't know if this relates to your audience or not. I think it might. But I think when you're writing or telling your story, you have to realize that it does not have to fit in with the number one hit that's out. It doesn't have to even sound like all that. The verbiage that you're using means something to you and to the people that are in your community that would understand it. And I think that's the biggest challenge, or one of the biggest challenges that people get into, is they think that their story is not good enough, or the way that they're saying it's not relatable or good enough, but there is a need for that. You know,
yeah.
You need
there's
to
always, and
that.
There's always that niche for that. And a lot of times that's where we start from.
Yeah.
And that's why having the veterans, we have a way different language than most people in the military. And so being able to like say those words, if you write a song like that, yeah, all the veterans in the military are going to understand you. So you still have a niche. You still have someone who's going to listen to it and understand it. But by bringing in these pro writers, that's when we bridge that gap. That's when we start taking these and like, wait, what does regiment mean? Or what does this mean? Well, what if we said it this way so that you still understand it and we understand it?
Yep.
And that's what comes the beauty behind the songs that we've been creating. But yeah, we appreciate it because, yeah, this isn't just for those veterans or the ones that just went through our songwriting, but any veteran who wants to maybe get into this or involved with this. So let the people know how to find you too. What's
awesome.
All your socials or the company that you started and all that fun stuff.
Yeah.
List them off.
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. This is like super cool. Like, it's been an awesome day, and just talking with you guys has been great. So thank you for that. And anyone who's listening, thank you for listening to Creative Vets, because these guys are great and they're fantastic and they're going to do wonderful things. You can find me at marktress.com, marktress.com. I have my Vocal 360 page on there too, if you're interested. I filter a lot of my artist mentorship through that. So you can work with me directly through there. And then you can find me on social media. If you just search my name, Mark Tress, you'll find it. It's on the interwebs. But on Instagram, and I have a professional music page, but that's just an extension of my Instagram pretty much at this point.
Cool. And we'll link it too on either this show or at least in the post that we do.
Yeah.
On
Send me a message, man. I'd love to hear it.
Heck yeah. Well, thanks so much. We appreciate you coming out and sharing with us. And awesome. Until next time, because I'll probably pull you in again at some point.
Let's do it.
Along maybe this year, 2021 is going to be a good year. Let's go, team. All right. Signing off.
Over and out.
What a great conversation with Mark. First of all, I want to hear what your takeaway was, Brett.
He talked about imperfections in the voice, and he was like, even I have imperfections. Sometimes I try to have more imperfections in my voice because it sounds more authentic. And I just thought that's kind of cool that the more imperfect your voice is, maybe the more perfect it is.
That's crazy. Yeah, it's crazy. It's kind of like when actors overact, because they're actually probably doing it. It's weird because they're not doing it better, but they're acting, they're doing it the way that they're taught, but it becomes robotic when you don't have these little tics that a normal person would have. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it's the exact same thing with music.
He also gave a whole bunch of advice on how to strengthen your voice through, obviously, diet and hydration are kind of the biggest things, but he also gave some vocal tips on blowing bubbles in chocolate milk.
Yeah, I was like, I haven't done that yet, but I keep telling myself, next time I see chocolate milk in a straw, I'm going to help my vocal cords.
Yeah. Yeah, it was great, though. He's such a great guy and really well-spoken and obviously a clear voice because he does that professionally.
Yeah, if you notice that huge, that he did earlier, almost blew my eardrums, but it was awesome.
Yeah, he can just pull that out of nowhere. It's always with him.
Well, awesome. Well, until next time, Creative Veterans peoples, we'll see you.